Welcome to the Readerly Report. Your hosts are Gail Weiswasser and Nicole Bonilla. We hope you will enjoy our candid book conversations, recommendations, and observations on the reading life. Thanks so much for joining us. Welcome to another edition of the Readerly Report. Today, Gail and I are here to catch you up on where we are with our fall reading. We made some picks, and I have started on a couple of them, so we'll check in with Gail to see if she started on anything that she had told us about and where her reading is, if she feels like she's going to close in on her goal. I'm feeling a little bit optimistic, Gail.
Oh, I'm glad somebody does. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what have you been reading recently?
Well, I was excited because I got The Unsettled by Ayanna Mathis in the house. I had been looking forward to reading that, you know, had been talking about it. And I'm always fascinated, especially when an author can wait so long between books, because I think The 12 Tribes of Hattie came out in 2012. And that's just always fascinating because I, you know, with publishing, I feel like people are under such pressure for deadlines, you know, to like not lose your momentum or not fade away. And I feel like when you have a debut novel, usually the follow-up is it within the next year or two, or I don't know. So I love that she was able to go away and take her time. Maybe she only signed a one book deal originally. Because, yeah, The 12 Tribes of Hattie came out December 6th of 2012. And it is now October of 2023. And I think she's a professor. I think she might teach in New York City. So I was like, what's she doing? So that's one of the things that I started recently that was on my list. I'm not that far in, but so far I'm finding that it's really good. Like, the story is engrossing me. It's about, you know, basically three generations of a family, an estranged daughter and mother. You know, the daughter has left her mother and she's kind of been bouncing around. She's had a child. She's just left a marriage that wasn't working for her. And it looks like she's about to rekindle her relationship with her child's father. Her son's name is Toussaint. He's 10 when the story starts. And as things get more chaotic in his mother's life, it looks like he is going to try to make this journey to his grandmother, Duchess, who lives in Bonaparte, Alabama. And she has been trying to hang on to what was once like one of the few only all-Black towns in Alabama. It's slowly being, their little county has slowly been carved up. And I think out of the 10,000 original acres, there's only 1,000 acres remaining. So she is trying to hold the little community together and make sure that she has this for her son and her daughter. So
I was in LA 2 weeks ago and I went to this bookstore called The Last, which is in downtown LA. And it's a mostly used bookstore. And I found a pristine copy of The 12 Tribes of Hattie.
Ooh.
And I grabbed it.
Ooh,
you recommended it so highly, so I'm excited.
So excited. Yeah. Definitely one that you want to read if you're a little bit down or don't. It's her 12 children, like just their circumstances affect the whole family, so it's not upbeat.
Okay. That's the impression I got. But I was like so happy to see it and I just grabbed it.
Yeah, that is amazing. You know, I moved in the winter of 2023. And so like my books are kind of stored. They're not, I don't think I would have given that away. I imagine that I still have that. I hope I do. So what have you been reading?
Let's see one that I've read recently. The most recent one I read was The Guest, which is a book that's gotten a lot of attention. And have you read that one yet?
No, it's on my list. Should it be on my list though?
Oh, gosh. It was so highly recommended.
Okay, so you have to take some off for that.
Yeah, it was so highly recommended by a range of readers. Like, my best friend read it and loved it. My brother read it. My sister-in-law read it. Like, it was definitely, like, a wide range of readers. And I did read her first book, The Girls. So I didn't, wasn't going in completely blind. And it's about, I don't know if you know anything about it, it's about this 20-year-old woman. Maybe she's 21. No, actually, she's 22, but she's young. She like is kind of a grifter. Like, she kind of goes from man to man by insinuating herself into their lives and then, like, sort of leeching off of them. She just sort of lives with them and lives off of them and sometimes steals from them. But she, when it opens, she's in the Hamptons. She's been living with this guy for like 6 weeks. She met him in New York and she's been out there at his summer house. And when the book opens, and this is, I'm not giving away anything that's really not pretty clear from the book jacket. Like, he's kind of kicked her out and she has nowhere to go. And so she's just drifting through the Hamptons, like trying to figure out what's her next move. Like, she's, you know, so she's a pretty unlikable character. She's not someone anyone would really aspire to be. And yet you sort of are on her side because she's surrounded by these kind of vapid, wealthy, you know, Manhattanites who are in, who have these homes in the Hamptons and don't appreciate their privilege.
So you feel, and like she should kind of take advantage of that. You don't mind.
You don't mind, right?
You don't want to be a grifter? You didn't want to be a grifter when you grew up?
I mean, grifters are so interesting to me because it's like I'm fascinated by this kind of constant dishonesty, the angling, the like every person is the new mark, you know, it's who can they take advantage of next? And that's what this kind of interesting about this book, because you're like, all right, well, how is she going to get herself out of this situation? And how is she going to survive for a week with no money and no house and, you know, how does she do it?
Like, and a nightmare I had, like being unhoused and not knowing where to go.
Right. So, you know, I did it on audio and I'm wondering if the audio, the narration was great, nothing against the narration, but doing things on audio prolongs them because it's slower to listen than to read. And I wonder if like the 5-6 days, whatever it was that it took me to get through the audio, almost prolonged this too much for me because it got a little tiresome. Like, I was sort of like, okay, like when do we get resolution or when does she redeem herself? And, you know, I wonder if I had done it on print, if in print, I would have liked it better. And I haven't written my review yet, but I think I'll probably say something about that. So I don't know. She's a wonderful writer. She's very observant. She's acerbic and funny and, you know, I like the writing style a lot. The book got it for me. It grew a bit tiresome. That's what I'll say about it. But I get why it's popular and people, I get why people like it. And, you know, there's no one really to root for in this book. And yet you find yourself kind of hoping she will figure out a way to get through it.
I read Bad Summer People and it was like that. I don't know if it was as well written as The Guest probably was, but it was just like, just a bunch of people, everyone's trying to get over on each other. And there's certain people that you just don't mind taking advantage, or you want to see what's going to happen, but you kind of want them to get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
No. And it's like, this wasn't set in the Hamptons. It was set in Fire Island.
Okay.
But similar kind of Manhattan type people were there for the summer.
Yeah, so that's one I read recently. How about you? What else have you been reading?
Okay, so I read Yellowface. Did mm-hmm. you read Yellowface?
Mm-hmm.
I liked Yellowface. I think I felt similarly about this, that I was kind of lingered a little bit too long for me, I think would be the only thing that I would say bad about it.
Mm-hmm. Almost a little bit like The Guest. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just kind of like, okay, this woman is unlikable. Pretty much everyone in the book turns out to be pretty unlikable, has their own kind of thing going on. So to remind everyone, this is about a white woman who is at her friend's apartment when she dies and she steals her manuscript, and her friend is Asian and she's written this literary fiction novel about Chinese laborers back in World War I. And so lots of things come into play just in terms of like how we view race and who gets to write what stories and who gets what opportunities. So no one comes off well in this story, but I did find it kind of fascinating. It did have that kind of, it's a first person narrative, I think, right? First person narratives are always kind of tricky.
Because
you're so married to the person that you're with. So on the one hand, it's like, oh, wow, you're kind of really awful. But I'm spending all of this time in your head. So it's, you know, there's definitely some suspense in terms of how will this resolve? Because of course, once she publishes this novel, there's just lots of questions about its authorship and who gets to tell which stories. And she falls into quite a few landmines.
Yeah.
Along the way. And I did, you know, I don't know, you mentioned development or what did you say? You didn't say development. You said something else. But I did feel like that, okay, she's been through so many stages, like it just felt a little long. And I just, I don't know, I wanted something more from the character that was not going to be there. So.
Okay. Did you enjoy kind of the navel-gazy publishing sort of insider stuff?
Yeah, I did. No one, like I said, nobody comes off well in this book.
No.
Everybody is terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even the lower level publishing executives have their, or publishing assistants have their moments. But yeah, I thought that part was good. I wonder how people felt reading this book in the industry. Like if there were some, if it brought anyone any clarity or winces or were they just as oblivious as June could be?
Right.
The part that where she's editing the novel and like, you know, making it better as she waters it down was kind of hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, I think there were a lot of sort of compelling and interesting things about this book. I mean, she's just hateable. Like she's just a horrible person.
Yeah.
And yet, kind of like with Alex from The Guest, and yet you find yourself rooting for her, or, you know, when she suffers her, you know, serious many downfalls, like she's constantly, you know, constantly, both of them are like, get to a point where neither of these two characters can pick up their phones because what's on their phone is so awful. There's constantly bad news waiting for them and hate and stress. And, you know, you get that anxiety about the phone. Like the phone becomes like almost a character in both of these books. And like, even as she's going through all that stress, which is completely brought on by herself and actually completely deserved.
Right.
And yet you still kind of want her to get away with it.
Well, is The Guest a first person narrative?
No.
I think first person narratives are kind of designed to be that way.
Yeah.
I mean, because you have no other thoughts. It's almost like Stockholm syndrome.
Right. Right.
All right. Well, when we do have our spoilery book club, you know, I don't want to say too much. And maybe I've said too much already, but
yeah.
What's next for you? What you read?
Okay, so my next book is called Pete and Alice in Maine. It's by Caitlin Shutterly. And this is a book that I heard about from Susie at Novel Visits. It's another book set in Maine. I think that's like two in the last 3 weeks that I've read. And this is about a married couple who live in Manhattan and they have two kids. And when COVID hits, they decide to decamp to their home in Maine. They have a house there, which is a summer house. And so it's kind of about this crisis in their marriage that they're facing right about the time that they leave. And they have to then sort of deal with each other in this quarantined, claustrophobic, intense one-on-one setting once they get to Maine. So it's really about the year of COVID. If COVID books give you anxiety, don't read this one because it'll take you right back. It's all of the sort of anxiety and uncertainty that came from those early months of COVID. And then adding to the stress for them is that they are viewed as interlopers in Maine. They're viewed as summer house people who have come from the city bringing the virus to a part of the country that has not yet really been touched by COVID. And so I don't know. I had mixed feelings about this one. I thought she did a really good job with kind of depicting those, you know, all of that emotion from those early days and about how the toll quarantining took on relationships and stressed, you know, the stress it put on relationships that may have already been stressed for other reasons. It's not like a super relaxing read because you're dealing with this, you know, this wife who's alternately angry at her husband and yet also grateful for having him. you've got two kids who are constantly fighting, and like one of them is a huge brat. And so you're, there's just like, I don't know, the stress that emanated on the page just from dealing with the daughter. And I don't know, like, I guess I kind of finished it and I was sort of like, well, what was the point? Like what, who grew in this and who changed and what was the sort of like, what was the point of investing time in the story? So for me, it was a bit of a mixed bag. I'm not sorry that I read it, but it's was not, I wouldn't rank it as like one of my favorite reads of the year. I think I did this one on audio. I did do this one on audio. And the audio was fine. It did a little bit of alternating perspectives, but it was strange because I felt like one perspective was given so much more time than the other ones that they almost seemed superfluous. There was like some written from the husband's perspective and some written from the kid's perspective. What the husband's perspective did was provide a little balance so you could kind of see his side of the story and gave some sense of how he, why, how and why he acted as he did. So that was, I guess that was helpful. I kind of maybe wish I'd had a little more of his perspective and a little less of hers. Mm. So, you know, if you like kind of angsty relationship books and, or you like COVID novels, you know, this is good. And Maine plays a role in this. Although the book that I read before that I love that I'll talk about a little later on this show, The Road to Dalton, Maine plays a really positive role. Whereas in this one, Maine becomes an antagonist. Like Maine is against them and is hard. So it's, you know, interesting.
Maine is against them.
Yeah. So that's Pete and Alice in Maine by Caitlin Shetterly.
That's such a specific title.
Yeah, I know. It's a strange title. I completely agree.
Okay, so my COVID novel that I read was completely trashy. It's The Spare Room by Andrea Bartz. And it is about this woman who first she's moved from, I think she has like a successful career in advertising in Chicago. And she moves with her boyfriend to Philadelphia. They have to move because I think he's lost his job. And, you know, so she's kind of trying to keep his secret and not telling her, you know, he didn't tell her about it or she wasn't clear on the details. But anyway, she's given up everything. She's moved to Philadelphia. She's in the process of having a job. And then the pandemic starts. And he decides that he no longer wants to get married. Like there is something alluded to that has happened between them. And he just wants to take a pause. He doesn't want to, you know, continue within any of their venues. And she has come in contact with a friend of hers from high school, someone she knew very loosely in high school, did not keep in contact with. But this woman is now an author and, you know, she's like kind of an influencer. She's on Instagram a lot. So they rekindle their relationship and she receives an invitation to come and stay with this friend and her husband in their spare room. And of course, you know, everything goes very well in the beginning, but she discovers that there used to be someone else who lived in this spare room and that woman has gone missing. I don't know. This one got very low scores on Goodreads. And I've read one of Andrea Bartz's room. I think Andrea Bartz's novels, the one called We Were Never Here, I think is what it is, which I didn't love. I thought that there were some things that were just like really implausible for that story. But while this story was implausible, it, you know, it's just like the character is kind of always making excuses. You know, she's very blind to things that would give anyone pause and send anyone running to Amtrak if they're staying with a couple that they don't know very well. She kind of glosses over it and there is some insta-love. But I was, you know, I was entertained by this to the end. And I wonder, and the acknowledgments, it seems like she comes out as a lesbian and she is happy with her new partner and she like just references people who stand up for LGBTQ plus rights and how she wouldn't be there for that. And I just wonder, you know, there is some swinging in this novel, same-sex relationships. I wonder if that affected any of the reviews because it was such, I don't want to say heavy-handed because, you know, these are the characters and that's the book she wrote, but I wonder if it was too much of a departure for some people. I mean, the book also was kind of like a little uneven and a little, like I was entertained, but I could see too that it was a little bit too long. And I don't know. You know how thrillers are. We talk about thrillers all the time. We get through them. You want to see what happens. And then you're just kind of like, okay.
I ended up checking that book out of the library, but then not reading it and returning it. I guess I was intrigued. Hearing you describe it as trashy makes me not unhappy that I returned it unread, just because I wasn't in the mood for that. But yeah. I was trying to get a handle on what it was. Like, it just seemed sort of intriguing, I guess.
Yeah. No, well, yes. If you're looking for something that has a little bit more depth, it's just like, it treats serious subjects with a very shallow brush, I would say. You know, she is grappling with her identity. Does she give too much in relationships? How needy she is. You know, she has got some undiagnosed, probably mental stuff going on, you know, some things that have happened. So it's just like, and she, like, this couple invites her into their marriage, as she says. They open their marriage to her. So it's a lot of stuff that I think, of course, in a novel you could treat very seriously, but it was just very topical. But entertaining. I mean, I read the whole thing. So it was just kind of like, I think it was just so all over the place that I was very curious as to where it was going. So, you know, you just roll your eyes and carry on.
Right. Okay. So my next book is a memoir. It's called In the Country of the Blind by Andrew Leland. It is about a man who is undergoing, he has a condition, probably not pronounce it correctly, retinitis pigmentosa. Actually, that's not that hard to pronounce. And it is a condition that causes the deterioration of eyesight over many decades. So it's not like a sudden blindness, but it's something that causes your sight to deteriorate much more gradually. So he was diagnosed with it as a teenager, and now he's in his 40s, and he's starting to get to the point where he's really losing his vision altogether. So it's a memoir. The subtitle is A Memoir at the End of Sight. So he's really getting to the end of his vision and talking about what that's like and sort of what it's like to live as a blind person, especially as a blind person who has had sight and, you know, has come to this gradually. It's obviously nonfiction. There's a fair amount of personal narrative in here, which I really liked. And then there's also a lot of other information that he includes, such as kind of the history of blind people and how they were treated by society over the centuries. And then also, you know, gets into kind of the political divisions between various factions that are various organizations and foundations that have been around, that are, the point of them is to support blind people, but they have their own divisions, like some favor Braille, some do not favor Braille. There's, you know, different factions just within the blind community. He spends a lot of time on that. And I'll be honest, I did this one on audio, that I found my mind wandering a bit during some of the more like historical or kind of factual political side of it. I much preferred the parts where he talked about what it's like in his shoes. For me, this is why I like memoirs, because it allows me to step into someone else's life that, fortunately or unfortunately, I don't lead. So I ended up kind of having slightly mixed feelings about it. I kind of wish I had liked it more, but the parts that I liked quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And maybe had I done it in print, I could have skimmed or skipped the sections that I wasn't getting as much out of, but doing it on audio, I didn't have that luxury because I didn't know what was coming next. This has gotten very, very good reviews, and I certainly don't want my ambivalence about parts of it to turn anyone off from reading it. I think it's a very worthwhile book. And, you know, it's like, it is really hard to imagine. And, you know, at one point he says that he thinks he read or has heard that like going blind is like people's worst nightmare. And he's living it. And so he talks about, like, is it really that much of a nightmare? And, you know, what are the parts of his life that have become enriched? And what are the parts of his life that he can continue to enjoy, and how he's adapted and how his relationships have adapted, and how his sort of his opinion of himself or the way he views himself has adapted. So there's really quite a bit here that's very compelling. I just, you know, I think, again, kind of like the guest, maybe I should have done it in print. It would have been a little more successful for me. But right. Certainly glad I picked it up.
Skim a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I think that that's fair for any book that is going to include lots of technical conversations about things that, you know, might not be within our everyday grasp. Bad Summer People was the tennis matches. Just like, know nothing about tennis. Okay, so what else have I been reading? Oh, I read Smacked by Eileen Zimmerman. Did you read that? You read that one.
I did. I really liked it. What did you think?
Oh my gosh, that was such a fast read. I think I read it within 24 hours.
Wow.
It's an interesting read because I don't know. I mean, she comes from such a privileged perspective that it was just eye-opening to see that, like, he died in 2015, that someone could look that bad and just be going through so much and you would not think about drugs. Like, he's skinny, his hair is thinning. It was just like a really interesting, eye-opening thing that, you know, how she discusses how she was so in the dark and how so many people are in the dark and will think of basically anything besides the fact that, you know, someone who is wealthy and white and with the world at his feet could be doing drugs, especially for attorneys, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. How'd you feel about that as a former attorney?
Yeah. I mean, I do think like it is not where your mind goes initially when somebody's acting strange or having symptoms. You don't think like, oh, that person is hot. What was his drug? Was he doing heroin?
It looks like it was cocaine and methamphetamines, but this was over the course of a few years.
Right. Right.
But she says that that's her blind spot and she couldn't get there. I thought that was very interesting and just like really interesting how we just have this block up against people that we love. You know, it's just fascinating that we can have a blind spot that I can see you as a certain way to the exclusion of something where she says herself that, you know, should have been fairly obvious.
Right. And she was so shocked in the end in the end of his life to learn what he had been going, you know, what he had been doing, what he had been going through.
I really wish she had done a little bit more. She says she goes to investigate how this happened or how he came to be such a heavy drug user, but she really doesn't. I mean, he's dead, so she can't ask him. She can just reference the text messages she sees to his dealers, the amount of money he's spending. But, you know, I think my spot with this was just like really wanting to know more about how he did get involved. Like we hear quite a bit about her marriage and, you know, why she felt like she couldn't leave it, the power dynamics between that. I mean, drugs aside, he does not seem like he was the best guy to be with.
Right.
And I think she's trying to get to the point that because of his lifestyle as like an attorney and making partner and the pressure that these were aspects of himself that he just pushed aside. But it seems like from some of her story, that was already apparent even before he went to law school.
Right.
But completely fascinating, you know, memoirs, they are what they are. Like you said, they're a window into how someone is thinking in a way that, you know, you don't or have not experienced for better or for worse. You know, this is her experience and she just told it very truthfully. And so it was super compelling read.
I did that one on audio and that was a great pick for audio. Because you get all the rawness there. You get all of her anger and hear it in her voice. And
oh, she read it.
She read it. Yeah. That was a great audio experience for me. So and I think it made the book even more memorable because even as you're talking to me about it, I'm hearing her voice in my ears, reminding me of, you know, the story and her life. And I thought it was really good.
Heartbreaking for her kids though, too.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
You know, her son feeling responsible. I mean, that first, what we're discussing here is not spoilery. That first part when she first goes to the house and discover him is like probably one of the most horrific things I've read.
Mm-hmm.
When she, you know, the things that she's realizing as she's, you know, coming to realize that he's no longer with them.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just, yeah, really visceral. The research was probably could have been better organized, but she told it, I think, in an organic way in relating to how she went on this quest to talk to people after Peter had died and just kind of reinforcing things that are echoed to her by psychologists and, you know, doctors and other lawyers and other people who are drug addicted, you know, because it's also big in technology and finance, you know. And her final chapter, of course, is turning to the future and just looking at a world where we prescribe, you know, basically drugs for everything. And we're not really sure what the long-term effect is for people who, you know, have, if marijuana is legal and people are using it sooner, and just like what's going to happen to the future generations.
Right.
But yeah, really.
What made you pick this one up?
I think because you talked about it.
Okay.
You talked about it, and I think it was one of those things that I was out, maybe, and just saw it and was like, oh, maybe I should read that. But yeah. It was really, yeah.
Okay. All right. So the last one I want to talk about is my favorite of the four, and it's called The Road to Dalton by Shannon Bowring. And this is a debut novel about lives in a small town in Maine. And it's very northern Maine. So we're not talking about, you know, places with fancy summer homes. This is like very remote, small town Maine with very working class lives. And it's basically interconnected chapters. So each chapter focuses on a different character, but they're all connected and they all become kind of this part of this tapestry of a small town. And I love this book. This was a 5-star read for me. It's a quiet, very character-driven book, which I always really like. And you've got people who are flawed and not always likable, but yet you're always kind of supporting them and understanding how they interact with each other. You know, just living just quiet lives that have lots of sadness, some joy and hope in them. And, you know, it's reminds me a little bit of like Elizabeth Strout, or maybe, you know, those just books about small, Ethan Joella, like books about small town life and just delving into kind of the human experience. So I just, it's not much more I can say about it, except that I just really loved it. And I'm so glad I read it. So it's The Road to Dalton by Shannon Bowring.
That sounds good. Maine representing in Gail's reading.
Yes. Lots of Maine.
So the last book that I read is called The Book of Goose by Yi-Yun Lee. And this is a very atmospheric novel, I think, about friendship. It is about these two girls who are growing up in the, I want to say, late 1950s, early 1960s in a rural French community where there is just a lot of poverty. People are still recovering, have not recovered from war. It's just like really devastated the community. And these two girls are very close and just have each other. And one decides that the other is going to take down her words and write a novel and to go into the world. So they collaborate with this guy who lives in the town. They write this book when they're 14. And it changes, you know, their lives and their relationships. Like the one who is the supposed author of the book, you know, she's the one who has just better penmanship and grammar, who writes the stories down. She is selected as the face of the book, and she goes out into the world as a result, as a consequence of the publicity that this has brought, you know, because these are these very just wrought and sad stories about children who are hungry and dying. And people are amazed that the depth and the descriptions that come from such a young woman. She's celebrated. She gets the opportunity to go to boarding school. And the novel begins as she's looking back on this time period in her life when she finds out that her friend, you know, the true author, I guess, of the books has died at the age of 27 in childbirth. And she has a very different life. She's living in America. You know, she's married. She is like raising ducks or geese on a farm with her husband. And I think that's, she reflects and tells this story. This is an interesting story because like I devoured it. Like I really read it very quickly, was very into it. I can't say that, you know, it's something that's just like, oh, I got this message about it. So I guess that's why I want to call it atmospheric more than anything else. And it's just like, if you can give yourself over to that, then I think you'll enjoy the novel. But then, you know, there's a lot when I get to the end, I'm just like, this makes absolutely no sense. But some books are like that.
I actually took this one from the library too, and then I had to return it because it was due and I hadn't read it. And I was kind of flirting with it though. So I'm so interested to hear how much you liked it.
I don't know. I did and I didn't. Like I said, I read it very quickly. I was very into it. I don't know how much sense it makes. It's like one of those things that if you can get caught up in the atmosphere of the book, if it's more about the emotion and like the relationship between these two girls and the longing for their childhood relationship, like, and really not wanting anything to change and their different personalities, I think that there's like that emotion that can hook you. But if you're someone who needs like the details of how this works or how this makes sense, like, you know, these two French girls from the countryside managed to like get the attention of some publisher who, and they write a second book, you know, there's just like a lot of stuff that goes on that it's just kind of like, yeah, I don't know if I believe that. So there is a little bit of a fairy tale kind of feeling to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you're looking though, I think Gail, sometimes you like things a little bit more concrete and tangible. And I don't know if that's there for this.
Okay. Well, you're again affirming my decision to return a book.
Right.
So yeah. I appreciate that.
All right.
Okay. Well, that was good. I'm glad we caught up on some good reads over the last month.
Yes. I'm really looking forward to getting back, settling down back into the unsettled. And I'll be curious to see if you ever fit Hattie in.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's sitting right here. All right. Well, we'll be back next time with more of what we're reading this fall. And then maybe next time we'll do a little check-in on our challenge and reading goals and just see how likely we are to make them.
Sounds good. Until next time.
Happy reading.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Readerly Report. You can find all of our shows on iTunes or at thereaderlyreport.com. Please join our Facebook group, Readerly Report Readers, where you can talk to other listeners about the reading life. You can also find Nicole at nicolebonilla.com and me, Gail, at everydayiwritethebookblog.com. Finally, we'd love it if you left us a review on iTunes and told your book-loving friends about us. Thanks.